Blog Talk Radio.
I can keep on hiding, but I can't reach the surface. Everybody's living different, I just can't compare. Too much left to bottle, took another shot of pushing it up, but I can't find a way to know.
I'm stuck, it's happens every month. I don't really ask for much. I just need to touch. Calm in this hole. I don't wanna watch it go.
No, I don't wanna watch it. Please just tell me
why I feel so stuck in my body's jumping. I can't change, no, I won't do it for no one. Driving, see you passing by. I just think that I deserve some change.
Hello and welcome to Sports Kingdom. I'm your host, Joan Breyer, the King, and today it's May 4th. That means Star Wars Day. Everyone's pumped up about Star Wars. I'm not certainly a Star Wars fan, but nonetheless, great to all those Star Wars fans out there today. May the 4th be with you. Today we have a special guest on, coming on exclusively here, Jared Zwirling. We've had him on previously before. He stopped by before to talk about the New York Knicks, NBA in general. In fact, we have him on right now. Let's bring him on. How's it going, Jared?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing?
Hey, what's up? So, hey, welcome to the show. To give a quick introduction about Jared, he happened to previously work for ESPN New York, NBA TV, Bleacher Report. Last time I had Jared on the show previously, and now he does work with Close Up 360, is a producer, director, comes on time to time, you know, as a guest on local shows and stuff. So, and I don't know if you still write, Jared. Do you happen to write?
Man, I do write a lot every day, but it's more it's more pitches, internal stuff, all the descriptions you see and captions and things like that. I'm still keeping up with social media. So, yeah, that's all in the framework of my inspiration or my background in writing. But, yeah, not on the feature side like that anymore, but it's still a part of me every day for sure.
Yeah, definitely you've had some tremendous success over the years, and now you're doing, as I mentioned, Close Up 360. Before we get into that, tell me what you think about the New York Knicks. Last time we had you on the show, you had hinted at possibly Carmelo Anthony leaving or possibly going elsewhere to the New York Knicks, staying or possibly going elsewhere from the New York Knicks. Where do you stand with the New York Knicks and how you feel they've transitioned?
Yeah, it's been amazing to see through the years. I mean, obviously, I go back to 2010 when I first started covering the Knicks for ESPN, as you mentioned. The first year was Amari Stoudemire coming, and then the next year was Carmelo Anthony, the trade there. And the year after that, 2012, was Jeremy Lin, him going off to Lin Sanity, and I was all a part of that, and then a few playoff runs. So I was covering the team for it was 4 years, 2010 to 2014. And no, still a supporter. Still, you know, I live in New York City, so still go to games and here and there. It's tough for me though because I'm from Miami. So and I went to the first Heat game back in 1988. So it's a little hard right now this series, but always a supporter of the Knicks. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see just the success they've had this year. This is their best team they've had, obviously, in about, I would say, 10 years or so, and maybe 8 years. But, you know, I think that their big three, Brunson, Barrett, and Randall, obviously, stability, you saw that in game two. So, obviously, Randall coming back from an injury. So, you know, what they've made up with that big three and the supporting cast, the trade for Josh Hart was really good. They got some really nice supporting pieces. I mean, Quickly was so close to winning Sixth Man of the Year. Love his progression at only 22 years old. I think he's 22. And then, I mean, Jericho Sims is not playing. I actually saw Jericho a few nights ago at a restaurant in New York, and he's still got that that arm sleeve. But if he was playing right now, he'd also be, I think, a valuable add right now. You know, you look at Bam out of bottle with the Heat and Cody Zeller and some of the Heat sides. But I think with Jericho in that lineup, too, can really pose a lot more damage off pick and rolls and things like that. Just another body that can get up there and defend against Bam and close the paint down. But, no, Jericho is a future talent to me. So that's one little bummer about the Knicks. But overall, I mean, they're right there. But, what do you say about the Miami Heat? You know, without Jimmy Butler, without Tyler Hero, their defense, their ability to close out on shooters. I mean, the Knicks are taking a lot of contested threes for the most part. Brunson got loose a little bit there in that fourth quarter in the second half with some threes there. He had a big game, but the Heat's closing out very well. You can tell they're just so well coached and so well conditioned. The way they move around the half court with closeouts and their scrappy defense, they get back in transition defense really well. I mean, you know about the Heat and their training camp every year. They're all about long-winded practices and running drills, using pads and practices. So guys have to be, you know, very much in shape to play for the Miami Heat. So you can see that now in the playoffs that, you know, without a few star players, they're still playing really hard, really scrappy, getting after it. And that's a testament to Miami Heat's DNA. And we'll see what happens in Game 3. But, you know, Jimmy comes back probably Game 3. So could change some things.
Do you think Jimmy Butler or Jalen Brunson has been the MVP of this postseason?
Man, it's only been two. Oh, you mean the whole postseason. I got you. I was about to ask you if you mentioned for this series alone. Oh, man. I would say Jimmy Butler. I mean, you have to give it to him the nod with those big games in the first round series against the Bucks, both over 40 points there. One was over 50 points. And then just, you know, the ability to be able to lead. They were the top seed, the Bucks. So right there alone, I mean, you got to see what he did just to get them over that heap to do that. So I would say Jimmy for sure. Also, you know, I look at Game One. That ankle was pretty banged up. I mean, you know, even after the game, the day after, it looked like a baseball. His ankle had blown up really big. So the fact that he was still putting weight on that thing in the third and fourth quarter and making some plays, I mean, that just speaks to Jimmy. You know, his story, growing up homeless, being adopted. You know, a lot of fight in his life to get to where he is today. So that's Jimmy Butler. So I just think what he's done and just his perseverance and what he means to the team, his step-up play. You know, they're tied 1-1. They won game one in the loudest arena, the most dedicated fan base arena in the NBA in a hostile crowd. They stole that game one. So I think that also speaks to him being – that MVP or that better player, if you ask that question about him or Brunson.
Yeah, definitely a huge Jimmy Butler fan, considering that I was a huge Jimmy Butler fan back when he was the Philadelphia 76ers. Out of all people, I certainly want to see him and Joel Embiid, either one of those two win a title. But with the series right now, I think Jimmy's playing some outstanding basketball. Without him last game, they lacked the rebounding efforts against the New York Knicks. But, you know, I believe Jimmy's going to come back. I'm actually going to Florida next week. I'm also here nearby New York. So it's just sort of a whirlwind, you know, how everything's taking place right now. But,
yep.
But, yeah, certainly, and I especially love to see Jimmy Butler on your series sometime, and that would certainly be a nice guy to have on Close Up 360.
Yeah, well, that's your point about the rebounding. I do agree with you there. I think that he did a really he's very scrappy. He's very physical, Jimmy. So I agree. I think the rebounding would have helped a lot in game two. And then he's just in his intelligence. I think that's something that I think speaks to Jimmy. He's up there with one of the smartest guys in the league with reading defenses and understanding where to be on the court at all given times. You know, I think Bam, for sure, as he sits back in the interior, he really is mostly the eyes and ears of the defense. But I think Jimmy serves also that purpose as well, really reading the sets so well and complimenting Bam to really see the court and where guys should be. And I think his leakouts, too, in transition offense were huge. I mean, Kevin Love, I think, had 3 or 4 outlet passes in game one to get Jimmy down the court for a few easy buckets in that second half. That was huge. But I agree, generally speaking, what you said. I mean, I think his rebounding and then his court awareness and leakouts, all that stuff, I think, really came in handy in game one, his intelligence. So, but, yeah, Jimmy, for a close-up, 100%. He's got a lot of interesting traits about him, not just with basketball and his story, overcoming homelessness and being adopted and just building a star power career in basketball, but off the court as well. He's got a lot of interest and a lot of a curiosity, I would say, which is what Jimmy is all about. I mean, you see how he travels the world in the summer. He loves going to Europe in the summer and immersing himself in European culture and, obviously, with his coffee brand, a lot of that is through his coffee, traveling the world. He's been able to infuse a lot of his interesting experiences around the world and bringing that back to his coffee brand and just his brand in general. He loves to meet new people, and like I said, he has a major curiosity about life. So I think off the court, there's a lot of interesting things there that I would want to get into and explore. So we'll see how it goes. But right now, they're in the thick of the playoffs, so maybe by June or so we'll be able to do some stuff together. We'll see.
Yeah, definitely. So, again, we're with Jared Zwirling. He is now with Close Up 360. Let's first, again, go back to what you were saying before, Jared. You were previously from Miami. You grew up in Miami. Talk about that experience growing up in Miami.
Well, a big thing for the whole experience was being outdoors a lot. The weather, I mean, that's how sports, the sports connection came for me all year round, playing everything, basketball, soccer, baseball, everything, tennis, golf. So appreciation for sports. And, that was a big thing. Now, what's interesting is that at the time when I grew up in the 1980s and 1990s, Miami was mostly a football town. Miami Dolphins with Dan Marino, the Hurricanes, obviously under Jimmy Johnson, then Larry Coker. They won a couple of national championships. So Miami was a football town. I didn't play football, but never really had the frame for or the will to get into any kind of CTE situation. No, I'm just kidding. But, basketball was my first love. But, I mean, I was growing up at a time that the city of Miami was a football town. So when I was growing up, I mean, admittedly speaking, basketball, too, came from Michael Jordan. I mean, he was everything to kids growing up in the 1980s and 1990s. So I think at one point I told my parents that I wanted to move to Chicago. So just to watch MJ live. But, I mean, that was a major inspiration for me and others, too, at that time. So that's sort of where basketball kind of became like the top focus for me. That's it. I mean, Miami was a lot of fun for that reason. And then I started getting into sports writing also at a very young age, too. I basically wanted to merge my love for sports also with storytelling. I came from a family of storytellers, not necessarily their jobs weren't storytellers or journalists, but our family was very much around always stories around the dinner table, around our family gatherings. There was always a lot of deep dive stories and details and sharing. We were also loved to travel, so it was always around like stories and meeting new people. So I always was curious with that, too, and so with that sort of environment growing up in and my interest in sports journalism. But I did like to write at a very young age. I try to merge all together between sports, storytelling, and my love for writing, which started at a very young age growing up in Miami, and then I just facilitated that passion through the years. So everything I'm doing now started when I was around 7, 8 years old. It's been literally a lifelong passion all through the roots of Miami and the experiences I had on let's say on and off the court, literally speaking. So that's how it all started.
You mentioned the Chicago Bulls. Did you happen to watch recently? And how much does that kind of documentary drive you to rise the ceiling of the organization?
Yeah, no, I mean, I watched that during COVID. They released it a year early. They were going to release, I think, in 2021, but they pushed it up a year because everyone had nothing else to do. So they released it during the peak of COVID.
You mentioned how much you travel. How was that like, the pandemic?
Oh, how was that like, the pandemic? I was mostly between New York and Miami. Fortunately, because I'm from Miami, obviously there was a little less restrictions there and to do certain things. So I was down there a little bit more. I mean, also with the outdoor stuff, that was key too, right? Like you can be outside, and so that was also good to be back in Miami. But no, love The Last Dance. I binge watched it, of course. I didn't binge watch it because it came out every week. But I guess my point is, like, right when it came out, I would watch it right away. So. But, yeah, it was every new episode, what, every week, right? I think it was every other week or every week. I can't remember now. I think it was every week. Every new Sunday was a new episode, right? So, but I would binge watch it, so to speak, right when it came out. I would do nothing but watch it. So I remember a lot of those days, but the best part was the behind-the-scenes footage, like everybody else, even people that came up around the 80s, 90s, never really saw any of that behind-the-scenes stuff. So, you know, Jordan practice and Jordan on the team bus and, you know, behind the scenes at the Olympics in 92, like playing the quarter game with his security team, like all that. That's why we watched it. We wanted to see all that behind the scenes raw footage. I mean, that was – now for the new fans, the young fans that were not around during that time, obviously a lot of them, I would say, knew MJ or at least somewhat have heard about him through basketball, but most of them probably knew about MJ through his sneakers. You know, I have little nieces and nephews, and they know MJ, but really for his sneakers. And that's – they just released the movie Air about his sneaker. So, you know, everyone knows about the sneaker. That's for young kids, that's like the thing they know, MJ sneakers. Came out, for those young fans, it made them realize, like, wow, MJ was a killer on the court. Our generation knew that already. We watched that because we want to see more of the behind-the-scenes stuff. But for the young generation – it was almost like this, like, wow, MJ was probably maybe the greatest ever in basketball. So that was cool for their realization, just different generational perspectives on MJ and the whole Last Dance. But for us, in my generation, it was all about the behind-the-scenes moments that we just loved.
How do you think Scottie Pippen was portrayed?
I would say, obviously there's been some back and forth there. I don't know the whole deep dive about that. Only MJ and Scotty know that. I mean, there's been some public talk about things that they didn't like about each other or really Scotty coming out about it against MJ. But, I thought his interview was good about the details of what happened. I mean, that was a thing, right? It goes also back to the behind-the-scenes stuff. That was also in the interviews, too. I mean, obviously, Scotty with the contract and Clay ran for him, stuff like that. I mean, that was very interesting because we didn't know any of that stuff really at the time. The Last Dance definitely was a MJ, slanted documentary. It was really, it just really brought out why MJ is the greatest and everyone else was just role players. But that's how it's been forever anyways. It's not like the documentary really had to say that. Everyone knows it's MJ, the MJ show. So, but with the documentary that came out, it definitely was planted more MJ. So I could see that there was some animosity there. But, Scotty went through his own situation. It was interesting to hear about. And I think that's really where I stand. I think that's the interesting behind-the-scenes part of it.
So who did you grow up idolizing? Was it Jordan? Was it Alonzo Mourning?
Oh, Jordan, for sure. Yeah, because like I said, that was the guy in the 1980s, 1990s, that was the guy that we all admired, no matter what city you were from. So, the growth of his play, the championships and the dream team, so that was all during my peak childhood. you emulate the moves on the court, the 3-2-1s, the MJ tongue, sneakers, all that stuff. So, you know, he and when you watch the movie Air today, directed by Ben Affleck, I mean, it really goes to show you that he was the catalyst for player marketing, player branding, player everything, player off the court, the whole world off the court. He was the one. So when it comes to when it came to idolizing MJ, it wasn't just basketball. It was the fashion, the sneakers, the tongue, the, you know, I even got my ear pierced. Like five of my friends, we all got our left ear pierced because, you know, we were young. I don't know. It was like that commercial, Be Like Mike. You know, you look back now, it's like, you know, it's amazing how a player could influence you like that. But I can see how kids today are influenced by a musician or a singer or an athlete, whoever. But that, like, he was the guy, Be Like Mike, the Gatorade commercial. So there's no, in the whole world of sports marketing, of player marketing, you know, he changed the whole game still does.
How do you think the younger generation is influenced today by LeBron James versus your generation, Michael Jordan?
I would say, it's similar, I would say. I mean, you know, LeBron, the sneakers, the movies, Space Jam 2, different TV shows, all the commercials, Beats by Dre, Sprite, right? I mean, he's all over the face of TV, Nike. So, you know, him and Steph Curry are all over the commercials. So it's just like MJ was back in the 80s, 90s. I mean, you watch the TV and it was mostly MJ. It is today with Steph, LeBron. So similar in that effect, I would say. The biggest difference is just social media to me. I mean, you just have now a day-to-day compared to their lives because they're posting almost every day on social media and they have, you know, more TV appearances and more you know, there's more cameras around. So I would say it's hard to quantify it, right? But I would just say the big word is visibility. MJ was visible at the time, but it wasn't like day-to-day visibility, right? You would just see like snippets of him from like a practice report, or then you would see him obviously on NBC when he played his games, the commercials, but he wasn't always visible. You know, with back then with television and other ways, but now it's like they're constantly visible every day. There's something, some video clip, photo. So I would say, if the young generation are able to be more locked in and follow more of the trends of what they're doing. So, like I said, it's hard to quantify because MJ's persona was so big, so global, but. You know, I would love to see the analytics or whatever you call it on how the increased visibility of players influences the young generation more because of how much more access you have into their lives and what you can watch and what you can listen to and all that stuff.
When I recently watched the Joel Embiid MVP press conference in Philadelphia, I was just touched, almost like Jordan in a way that When Embiid brought up his brother, how much he has played for his brother over the years, now to be a late brother, you know, it sort of reminded me of Jordan in a way, when Jordan lashed out over his father passing away, and it was just very reminiscent of that.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think I try to speak to the comparisons there, but yeah, I definitely have always enjoyed Joel Embiid's remarks. So he, obviously day to day, he's talking about more about basketball and what happened in the game, but in big moments like MVPs and other big moments of his life, he does always go back to his family and being from Cameroon and how he's an influence for other kids from his country and stuff. So that, yeah, that's always, I think he's very genuine when it comes to that. So that's always appreciated. I've always respected Joel for that.
Yeah, you know, it's a huge revolution today with some of these international players such as Embiid, Jokic, and Webb very soon. I mean, real quick, what do you think about some of the younger international talent these days rise into the occasion more than some of these college players you see in the U.S.
Oh, like international guys coming in?
Yeah.
Yes. Like they're impacting the game? Yeah, I mean, every year, what is it now, over 120 international players? I mean, every year the number keeps going up and up. So, and they're mostly from Europe and Africa. The increase of Latin players has been pretty steady, I would say. You know, we haven't seen a lot of new players from Latin countries coming in. A few more guys from the Dominican Republic, I would say, you know, Puerto Rico. But, you know, for the most part, they're really coming from Europe, Africa, for the most part. A few kids from the Philippines. But, I mean, the hottest country for talent is Africa, for sure. I mean, obviously the Basketball Africa League is there, and, you know, there's a lot more talent coming from Africa, for sure. Because then also the talent from Africa is then going to play in professional leagues and with professional teams in Europe, which a lot of guys have done that. So, yeah, I mean, I think the top talent is still the Americans, right? I mean, you look at just the skill set. The offensive skill set with a lot of the Americans coming in, they're so the offensive polish now with the guys coming in. It's so polished with their combo moves, their multiple step backs. Offensively speaking, the advancement of offensive schemes and offensive skills is just so good right now. So they're getting that through the American system. The guys coming from Europe and Africa, they're still a little raw coming in with a lot of different moves and skill sets, but the raw talent is there. But yeah, the AAU American one-and-done system, those guys are still going to dominate. I mean, Victor Wembanyama from France, you know, he's a unique outlier. But most of the top talent will still be coming through the American. Like, the next year's draft, you know, there's so many top guys from the U.S. coming through. It should be one of the best drafts ever next year. And the years after that, there's some really good talent coming up in the American system. But the international guys are good. They're just a little more raw, I would say.
Yeah, it's interesting. You got the Dream Team, like you mentioned. Then you got Redeem Team. And now you got the FIBA World Cup coming up soon. I don't know if we're going to be covering that. But should be interesting.
Yep.
Although, let's get right on to your education now, Jared. You went to New York University. How much do you credit that education for how much you know now?
College was a great experience, but I would say just being in New York City, period, was really where I was at. All the internships, being in the media capital, going to different events from the draft, et cetera, meeting different contacts, connections here. That was the real reason why I went to college in New York, was to be around all of that media landscape, conferences, networking, you know, things, everything like that. So I wanted to make sure I was here for college so I can get into the industry quicker rather than going to college outside New York and having to kind of work my way into the city. So I wanted to kind of get my footprint early on in New York, be part of the culture here of sports, and that definitely helped. I mean, my first job was I had a few internships and all that in media companies and some writing jobs, but my first real job was with the MBA, and they're obviously headquarters here in New York. So it really spoke. Once I got that, I mean, I realized that going to college in New York was all worth it.
Yeah, definitely. I've been to Hofstra University before in New York, but it's definitely nice, you know, to be able to get that connection first with the MBA, and then you had your own writing publication at one time. Talk about that.
Yeah, I had a sports blog about, this is when I was much younger. Like, I had my own sports blog about 15 years ago. So, I was always writing. I mean, what I'm doing today with this off-the-court storytelling, like I said, it started at a very young age, around 7-8 years old. And so everything that I've done since then has been always rooted in I would say that lifestyle off-court way. Obviously, I've covered the game. I've covered, when I covered the Knicks, for example, as we talked about, I was covering the day, the games and the practices. And it was less about the X's and O's. I'm sorry. It was less about the like news of the day and less about, you know, who won or lost or why. It was like the deeper stories around like the friendships, the behind the scenes stuff going on, what guys are doing off the court with different events, building their brands, things like that, pursuing their interests. So, you know, all that, when you asked about the blog or what I had when I was younger, again, it was just another step to what I'm doing today. It was another way to capture the off the court humanizing side of athletes. And so, every job I've had has mostly been kind of geared a little bit towards that, maybe in a different way, a little bit here and there. But, I worked at Bleacher Report. I worked at the Player Association. I worked at Sports Illustrated. And each of those jobs, too, as I got more into my career, were, you know, facilitating the lives of players off the court and helping them in their pursuits and then covering those stories to give fans a better, closer-up perspective of what they were doing beyond the game.
Nice. Aside from close-up 360, which job has been your most rewarding experience over the years?
I would say probably working at the Player Association, because it was the best directly with the players. It was the first time I really worked directly with them. And, being in meetings with them, being in events with them. Technically, at the time, when you work for the Players Union, the Players Association, technically the players are your bosses. They're your managers. You're working for them. That's the technicalities of the job, but it's not, you know, it's really collaborative. And it's collaboration work, and we're trying to help players out. But technically, we are the union representing players, so you work for the players, and you have their best interest in mind. But for me, you know, I looked at it, you know, for more of like, I created the first ever in-house media writer job for the PA ever in its history. So my whole thing was coming in, and at the time, before I got there, it was a lot of press releases. Players launched this, players did this, or the news was really through press releases and quick tweets. So I came in and really wanted to solidify a storytelling angle to the PA. So I was saying, look, you know, you work with all these players. I know many of them already. They're doing a lot of cool things off the court and in their lives and pursuing different interests. Let's tell stories around that. So it was fulfilling because, to answer your question, it was fulfilling because I created the position for the first time. I told really special stories, and I had a chance to really get to know a lot of players more personally on a more personal level, you know, and less about basketball, but, you know, about their families and just things that they want to do in their lives beyond the game. So I built that trust and credibility with the guys. So I was doing a little bit of that before the PA. The PA just enhanced it to get more into the player side, so which I've always been a part of. I'm more of a collaborative partner with players, how I work with them. Every idea, every story, everything I do with them is always a collaboration. So, it definitely was facilitated and definitely spearheaded from that experience working with the PA. And I'm always grateful for them to see my vision and work in there and make it come to life.
Huh. So you mentioned it. You mentioned being spearheaded. Did that really play a major part in you starting Close Up 360?
A little bit, but it was always I wanted to start Close Up Pro. You know, for many years, I didn't know what I didn't know what I was going to call it, but it was always the vision to do something like this at some point. When did it actually happen? I started my own blog, my own website, like 15 years ago. You know what I mean? So like it's like I've always been entrepreneurial in that sense. And even the jobs, even the companies that I worked for, like Bleacher Report, Sports Illustrated, the PA, the Player Association. So I created my own positions at all these companies because I was doing off-the-court storytelling. I had access to these guys. So it really all of it's been the same for the most part. It was just taking all the experiences and saying, you know what, I'm creating all these jobs and these experiences. Now I'm just going to do my own thing. So it's been years in the making, I would say. Nothing really from one specific job.
Yeah, so – you owned your own publication. Now you own Close Up 360. I mean, just tell me first what initially gave you the name Close Up 360.
Yeah, I mean, I love photography, and I think a lot of it is, you know, we tell stories of players close up, like really who they are off the court. Like you know, we're right there with them. But close up to them, you know, like I said, I love photography. So the idea of a close-up shot, a close-up photo shot of them, like, you know, seeing them in their own off-the-court element. So close up, and then that kind of came from all that. And then with 360, obviously 360 is a nod to a 360 dunk. So it ties to the terminology of basketball. And then also, too, 360 is it also represents the full spectrum of how we're covering players off the court. We're covering them in a 360-degree way, like who they really are off the court, like everything that they do, you know, from their interest in community work, charity work, you know, their interest in business, fun activities, whatever it is. It's like we cover them in a 360-degree way, plus it's a nod, like I said, to basketball. So close to 360. That's kind of how it came to be.
Yeah, I was going to say before, you know, you've jumped from many certain positions, and now you're with Close Up 360. I mean, how passionate are you with Close Up 360 now? Are you going to really pursue this forward and continue to be inspired enough to interview more and more of some talent you can go on to maybe elaborate about?
Well, you know, this is my passion. And the thing about what Close Up is, I mean, some people don't really know everything about it. We have some announcements coming up too soon, some new expansion for Close Up. So we're a media platform production company. So what that means for us is that we obviously – through the media side, we create content that lives on Close Up. Players, we share with players. You know, we do a lot of our own content curation, you know, for the media side of Close Up and all that type of stuff. That's like more of like a Close Up project. We also have the production company side. So we work with clients and brands and players and other entities to create content with them. It's packaged a little bit differently with the client or player in mind, and then we sort of help them. We help guide the stories and produce the stories. We also do long-form documentaries. So we do 30 minutes up to an hour and a half long documentaries. So we're in the documentary business. We're also in the global distribution business too. We have we're launching soon our first global platform. So we're going to be in over 20 countries this year, where fans around the world could watch these off-the-court stories. So we also serve as an aggregator and distributor of content. We're not just like a single form business with just, you know, telling stories. It's more of like also the curation and the licensing and distribution of stories. So we want to make sure these stories get out there and fans around the world could get to know these players off the court, who they really are. So it's a multifaceted business. It's sort of like it's actually really like a three-tier business, Close Up 360. It's media focused, it's production focused, and it's distribution focused. So we try to nail all three of them down. But at the end of the day, it's rooted in collaboration, whether it's a brand, player, client, whatever. You know, we really want to make sure that the best stories are told in the right way, stories that are cared for, stories that aren't rushed. It's not cookie cutter or sensationalized content. It's authentic. We take our time with them. You know, it's premium storytelling. It's really like authentic. And in the world today of a lot of clickbait and a lot of, you know, I'll just say crap content, you know, we really try to create a niche with really compelling, meaningful stuff that will make you smile, inspire you, maybe shed a tear a little bit, but it's meaningful stuff. And I think when we create this type of stuff, the players and reps respect it, because we also show players the stuff. They get the chance to watch it. They're very involved with the process. So it's a very, like, careful, you know, methodical process we take with players and people, because we want to do it the right way. I was trained like that. The world today is a crazy place when it comes to a lot of stuff out there and a lot of, you know, like I said, like sensationalized and clickbait content. So we're just trying to create a real special niche that it kind of helps bring real value to storytelling.
Really cool. Everyone check out Close Up 360 on social media, closeup360.com. I mean, you want to quickly plug that in, Jared?
That's perfect. That's great.
Oh, great. Yeah. So, yeah, I just have a few more questions. These are meaningful questions to me.
I got about 10 more minutes, so let's rock.
All right, so. Yeah, just a few more questions. One in relation to Kobe Bryant, of course. We were talking off air about how you got the opportunity to speak to Kobe Bryant before he passed away not too long ago. And just wanted to hear your impression of how that whole interview went down and what it was like to interview one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, this is for everyone listening, this is my favorite story, not just because it's Kobe Bryant, just how it came together. So I'll tell you how that came together. So I was in, I was following Team USA. This is during the 2019 FIBA Basketball World Cup. But interestingly enough, it used to be called the FIBA Basketball World Championships, and they changed the name for that year, the FIBA Basketball World Cup, keep in line with the Soccer World Cup. So I was with my team and I were with Team USA. We had started with them in Las Vegas during the training camp and then went to L.A. They had a game there. And then Team USA flew to Australia. They had an exhibition game in Melbourne and then in Sydney. And then from there, they were flying to China, of course, to initiate their reign for the gold medal at the World Cup in China where it all took place. We were with them, covering them. It was fun. So I had my team in Vegas and L.A. So I decided to meet Team USA in Australia because I had some global work to do out there. So I aimed to be in Australia for a week and then in China for the first week in Shanghai. So I was with Team USA. And so one of my business partners is Karan Butler, who also is the Miami Heat now, obviously now the assistant coach with the Miami Heat. And Karan obviously played with Kobe on the Lakers. They were very good friends. So I had read that Kobe was going to be an ambassador for the World Cup that year. It was going to be Kobe and Dirk Nowitzki. So I had reached out to Karan before I went to China. I said, look, I'm going to be in China. I know Kobe's an ambassador. I'm really curious. Is he coming to China? Like, what's his game plan? And Karan said, let me find out. So his task was to figure out, like, what Kobe's schedule was. You know, meanwhile, I was in Shanghai with Team USA and doing my thing out there. I had touched base with Karan a couple of times. I didn't hear back. So I assumed that he hadn't heard back from Kobe or Vanessa, obviously Vanessa's wife. So I said, all right, well, I guess nothing's going to happen here. So, I wasn't really expecting anything, honestly, with Kobe, because I knew that if he did come to China, he'd probably be very, very busy, or he might come in and out. I didn't know, but I figured it was a long shot. So I kind of wrote it off. But here's what's crazy. I was boarding my plane from Shanghai back to New York City. I was on the plane already. Like, the doors had closed, and I'm just doing some final text messaging and stuff. And Karan texted me. He said, Kobe is coming to China. He's coming to Beijing, because Beijing was going to be where they – final round was going to be, where the championship was going to be. So first week was in Shanghai. The final round was going to be in Beijing. So, he mentioned that Kobe was coming. He was going to be here these dates, and he's available to meet you. Meanwhile, I'm on the plane about to fly back to New York. It's like a 12-hour flight, something like that. So what I did was I had some Wi-Fi on the plane, but not the whole flight, just a little part of it. And I was emailing and texting some reporter friends that I knew in China that were still there. And I said, look, you know, I didn't want to name who it was for the reporters that I knew, because obviously I didn't want to jump the gun too quickly that, you know, I didn't want to get them too excited or, like, you know, start spreading news that Kobe was there. So I said, look, you know, we have a prominent interview coming up. Just wanted to see what your schedule was like. And some guys were open, you know. They said, just let me know. And I said, okay. But it honestly, man, it really hit me on the flight and when I had landed that, look, it's Kobe Bryant. You got to find a way to do it. You can't let someone else just – you got to be there. So literally I landed, I booked my flight, and rested up at my apartment, and the next day I literally flew back to Beijing. So I was literally back in China like 12 hours later. So, you know, they talk about a wild like 2 days. China, New York, and back to China, and that's where I met Kobe in Beijing. So I did it. Crazy story, but that's how it all happened.
Thank you very much for the time, Jerry. We're out of time. Make sure to check out Close Up 360. And with that, thank you guys very much. Peace out.
Peace out.